All right, so are you ready for a case that really kind of flips the script on the whole citizenship equals rights idea? We're diving into Minor v. Happersett from 1874.
Okay.
This Supreme Court case is about a woman named Virginia Minor who fought like crazy for her right to vote.
Right.
She argued that the 14th Amendment guaranteed it.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, she lost.
Wow.
And that loss, it's still shaping legal debates today.
Okay.
So picture it.
Yeah.
Post-Civil War America.
Right.
The 14th Amendment's ink is barely dry,
Right.
promising equal protection for all. But women are still shut out of the voting booth.
Oh, wow. So this is really a fascinating case. It's not just some like dusty legal footnote.
Right.
It goes straight to the heart of how we interpret the Constitution
Yeah.
and what the limits of judicial power actually are.
So Virginia Minor,
Yeah.
she wasn't just some random person who just kind of stumbled into a lawsuit, was she?
No, not at all.
Okay.
She was like a major player in the suffrage movement. Think of her as like a legal strategist
Okay.
using this case to spark a national conversation about women's right to vote.
Okay, so it was a very intentional move on her
Oh,
part,
absolutely.
even if she maybe knew that she wouldn't win in court.
Yeah, possibly.
Clever. So how did she build her case?
Well, her team focused on the 14th Amendment's privileges or immunities clause.
Okay.
It basically says states can't infringe on the fundamental rights of U.S. citizens.
Okay.
So her argument was that voting is one of those fundamental rights, like you can't separate it from citizenship. They were pushing for like a bold, expansive reading of the amendment,
Yeah.
not just like a protective one.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what went wrong? Was
Yeah.
it just, a bunch of old out-of-touch justices who were stuck in the past?
Not quite.
Okay.
The court actually ruled unanimously against Minor.
Really?
Yeah.
Unanimously.
And that included justices who were actually considered progressive for the time. So what's really interesting is that they leaned heavily on the idea of originalism,
Okay. Yeah.
which is basically the concept that we have to interpret the Constitution based on what the founding fathers intended.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
If they were so focused on the past,
Yeah.
wouldn't that make the Constitution kind of like static,
Yeah.
like unchangeable?
Yeah.
And couldn't that create problems later on down the line?
Exactly. And that's the debate that's still raging on today.
Right.
Does the Constitution evolve with us, or
Yeah.
are we stuck with the founders' vision?
Forever.
Yeah, forever.
Minor v. Happersett is like a perfect example of how that question can actually play out
Oh,
in the real world
totally.
with real
Oh,
consequences.
well, consequences for sure.
And speaking of consequences,
Yeah.
it sounds like this case really like supercharged states' powers when it comes to voting,
Absolutely.
which is a whole other mess,
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
like a can of worms.
The Minor ruling basically cemented the idea that states had a ton of leeway when it came to deciding who could vote within their borders.
Okay.
We're still wrestling with that tension between states' rights
Yeah.
and federal power today.
Especially now with like voter ID laws
Oh, yeah.
and all the controversy around them.
Big time.
All right, so if we're talking impact, this case really throws its weight around.
Right.
But I have to ask,
Yeah.
if the court was truly unanimous, did anyone at least like voice some concerns?
That's a good question.
Even if they ultimately sided with the majority.
It's surprising, but
Really?
no dissenting opinions at all.
Wow.
Every single justice, from the most traditional to the most forward-thinking,
Yeah.
agreed that the 14th Amendment didn't grant women voting rights.
You'd think with a decision this big,
Right.
someone might have at least raised an eyebrow.
You'd think.
Right.
Yeah.
It's especially weird considering the 15th Amendment
Yeah.
passed just a few years before prohibited denying the right to vote based on race. So why didn't the court see gender discrimination as like a similar issue?
All right.
They were dealing with equality in both cases, right?
Yeah, that's a crucial point.
Yeah.
And it really highlights the social context of the times.
Okay.
So remember, this was right after the Civil War.
Yeah.
The 15th Amendment was viewed as an essential measure
Okay.
to dismantle the legacy of slavery and protect the newly won rights of African Americans.
Right.
But for a lot of people, gender equality just wasn't on the same level. There was this deeply ingrained belief
Okay.
that women's roles were inherently different from men's, and that justified denying them access to the ballot box.
Wow. So it wasn't just about legal interpretation
Yeah,
then.
right.
The court was also working within like a specific social and political landscape
Exactly.
that shaped their understanding of what equality even meant.
Precisely. And it goes to show that legal decisions aren't made in a vacuum.
Right.
They're products of their time, influenced by social norms, mm-hmm. political pressures,
yeah.
and the prevailing ideologies of the day. It's yeah. all connected.
Okay.
Yeah, it really like underscores how important it is to understand the historical context behind any legal decision.
Right.
It's not just about like the words on the page.
Yeah.
It's about the bigger societal forces at play.
Yeah. You know, it makes you wonder if the justices were like feeling the pressure of the political climate at the time.
Mm.
Like giving women the right to vote.
Right.
That would have been a huge shift.
Oh, yeah. Massive.
Maybe they just weren't ready for that level of change.
It's hard to say for sure.
Right.
But you're right. Mm-hmm. Judges, even Supreme Court justices, they're products of their time.
Mm-hmm.
Their views are going to be shaped by social norms and the political winds blowing around them.
For sure. For sure. Okay, so we've established that the court was like really into this originalist interpretation.
Right.
And that, you know, societal norms definitely played a part.
Mm-hmm.
But something's still bugging me. They were fine with protecting voting rights based on race with the 15th That's Amendment.
Right.
But not gender.
Yeah.
By the double standard.
Well, that gets to the heart of how differently race and gender were viewed back then.
Okay.
The 15th Amendment passed right after the Civil War.
Mm.
It was seen as like absolutely essential to fixing the wrongs of slavery.
Okay.
It was about guaranteeing basic rights
yeah.
to newly freed African Americans.
Right.
But gender equality just wasn't seen as a similar fundamental issue at that point.
Okay. So it wasn't just about interpreting the law then.
Right.
It was about the social values of that time.
Exactly. The minor decision really shows those prevailing societal norms
okay.
that put women firmly below men
wow.
in the social hierarchy.
It's a tough reminder that legal progress doesn't always match up with social progress.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the law has a lot of catching up to do.
It really does.
And in the case of women's suffrage,
yeah,
it took decades of activism.
Oh, yeah.
Organizing. Mm-hmm. And just pure determination to finally get the vote
right
through the 19th Amendment.
Exactly.
Which makes Virginia Minor like a true pioneer.
Absolutely.
Even though she lost this specific fight.
Yeah.
She really paved the way for future generations of suffragists.
For sure. Her case is a testament to the idea that even when you lose in court,
mm-hmm.
you can still spark change. Minor v. Happersett, even though it was a legal defeat.
Yeah.
It brought the issue of women's voting rights into the national spotlight.
It's like that saying.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to lose the battle to win the war.
Exactly.
But I'm curious, like, what happened right after the Minor decision?
Well.
Did suffragists just immediately shift gears and go all in on a constitutional amendment?
Well, the Minor ruling basically closed the door on the courts as a path to women's suffrage.
Okay.
They realized the constitutional amendment was the only way to go.
Right.
But that was going to be a long and difficult process.
Yeah.
They needed a nationwide movement,
mm-hmm.
like a wave of public support.
Okay. And they had to overcome some serious resistance
oh, yeah.
from anti-suffrage groups.
Right. Of course, it's kind of mind-boggling that it took another 50 years.
I know.
For the 19th Amendment to be ratified.
It's a long time.
It is.
It really shows the dedication and perseverance
yeah.
of the countless women and men
right.
who fought so hard for that right to vote.
And you know that fight's not over.
Hmm.
Like we talked about earlier,
yeah.
Minor v. Happersett's legacy
right.
is still alive in debates about voting rights today.
Absolutely.
Especially with things like felon disenfranchisement
mm-hmm.
and voter ID laws.
It's a powerful reminder that the battle for voting rights is ongoing.
Yeah.
Protecting this fundamental right for all citizens has to be a constant effort.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go back to the 14th Amendment for a second.
Okay.
The court in Minor was so focused on the fact that voting rights weren't, like, explicitly spelled out.
Right.
But what about the Equal Protection Clause?
Right.
Couldn't that have been a strong argument for women's suffrage? That's a great question.
Right.
And it's one that legal scholars have been debating for ages.
Yeah.
So the Equal Protection Clause
yeah.
basically says that states can't deny anyone equal protection under the law.
Right.
Seems like a slam dunk for challenging gender discrimination in voting, right?
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, how is denying women the vote equal protection?
Right.
By any stretch of the imagination.
Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
The court in Minor and in cases that came after,
yeah.
they took a really narrow view of the Equal Protection Clause.
Okay.
They didn't see gender as a suspect classification, mm-hmm. like race.
Okay.
Which basically meant that laws discriminating against women
right.
faced a much lower bar
okay.
to be considered constitutional.
So they're saying it's okay for states to treat men and women differently when it comes to voting.
That was the logic at the time, yes.
Wow.
And that's why the 19th Amendment was so important.
Right.
It explicitly said that the right to vote couldn't be denied or abridged on account of sex. So it finally put an end to that blatant gender discrimination.
It's crazy to think how long it took for the law to catch up with such a basic idea of equality.
I know it is.
But like we've been saying,
yeah,
this fight for voting rights, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Totally.
We can't afford to get complacent.
Absolutely. Minor v. Happersett is a powerful reminder that even seemingly settled legal issues can be challenged and even reversed.
Wow.
This fight for equality is a constant push and pull.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be vigilant about protecting the rights that others fought so hard for.
For sure. You know, there's one detail in this case that just keeps sticking with me.
Oh, yeah.
Missouri, the state that was being sued.
Right.
They didn't even send a lawyer to argue before the Supreme Court. What's up with that?
That is strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Historians have, like, tossed around a few theories. And some think Missouri was just so confident they'd win that they didn't see a reason to put up a big defense. Maybe they thought the law and social norms were so on their side that it was a done deal.
So they were basically like, why bother?
Exactly. Or maybe they just didn't want to spend time and money on a case. They were sure they'd win anyway.
Right.
Remember, this was a time when the very idea of women voting seemed crazy to a lot of people.
Right. Or maybe they just didn't want to stir up more controversy.
Mm.
Like maybe they thought keeping quiet would stop the issue from getting more attention.
That's a good point.
Right.
By not actively defending their position, they could try to downplay the whole thing and prevent the suffrage movement from getting a bigger platform.
It's interesting how even choosing not to participate can be like a strategic move in a legal battle.
Absolutely. And in Minor v. Happersett, Missouri's silence really speaks volumes about how people felt about women's suffrage at the time.
It really highlights like the power dynamics.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they were saying, we don't even need to listen to your arguments.
Right.
Because we're the ones in charge.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
And that's what makes Virginia Minor's willingness to challenge the system so incredible.
Right.
Even when she was facing that kind of dismissal.
Yeah.
She knew it was an uphill battle.
Yeah.
But she refused to be silenced.
Talk about tenacity.
Right.
Her courage and determination are really inspiring.
For sure.
It's like a reminder that even when the odds are stacked against you, you should never give up on fighting for what you believe in.
Never give up. And that's why, even though she lost her case, Virginia Minor deserves to be recognized as a true trailblazer.
Totally.
She dared to challenge the status quo and demand her rights.
Well said. Okay, so before we wrap up this deep dive into Minor v. Happersett, I want to throw out a question to our listeners.
Okay.
Do you think the Supreme Court was right to stick with such a rigid reading of the Constitution?
Hmm.
Or did they miss a chance to push for greater equality?
Right.
What does this case tell us about the balance between judicial power and social change?
It's something to think about.
Okay. So we've been exploring Minor v. Happersett.
Right.
It's that landmark Supreme Court case that said women couldn't vote.
Yeah.
Based on the 14th Amendment.
Uh-huh. Back in 1874.
And we left off with a pretty big question.
Right.
Did the Supreme Court get it right by like holding on so tightly to a strict interpretation of the Constitution?
Well, that question has been a hot topic among legal scholars and historians for decades, really. You can see the court side of things.
Okay.
Their decision lined up with the way most legal minds thought back then.
Okay.
They basically said that if the Constitution didn't specifically give women the right to vote, it wasn't their job to just create that.
Right. So they were all about judicial restraint.
Right.
That idea that courts shouldn't be making big social changes and should leave that to the legislative process.
Okay.
But wouldn't that mean progress would be super slow?
Yeah, that's the trade-off, isn't it?
Yeah.
On one hand, you have stability, and you're sticking to legal tradition. But then you have the critics who say the court missed a chance to really push for equality and actually uphold the spirit of the 14th Amendment.
Right, which at its heart is about equal protection under the law.
Exactly.
I get the argument for judicial restraint.
Yeah.
But it seems like they could have at least said, hey, it's not fair to deny women the vote. Even if they felt stuck with legal precedent.
Yeah, that's the real issue this case brings up.
Right.
It makes us think about when, if ever.
Right.
It's okay for courts to move away from a strict interpretation of the law.
Right.
To make rulings that help social justice.
Hmm. A question that's still relevant today.
Oh, totally.
Especially with debates about affirmative action.
Yeah.
Same-sex marriage and abortion rights.
Minor v. Happersett really shows us that legal interpretations aren't fixed.
Yeah.
They change over time. Mm-hmm. They're affected by social movements, changing values, and even who's on the courts.
Right. And that leads us to the lasting impact of this case.
Right.
It was a big setback for the suffrage movement in the short term.
Yeah.
But it actually made them even more determined.
It did.
And pushed them toward a constitutional amendment as the only way to get voting rights for women.
It's a classic example of how losing in court can sometimes lead to progress.
Right.
The Minor decision really fired up the suffrage movement.
It did.
It led to decades of campaigning, organizing, public pressure.
Right.
And it all led to the 19th Amendment in 1920.
50 years of fighting.
Yeah.
But they got there.
They did. And that victory wouldn't have happened without Virginia Minor and her team.
Yeah.
They were the ones who dared to challenge the system.
They did.
And push the boundaries of legal interpretation.
So what are the key takeaways from our deep dive into Minor v. Happersett?
Well, it's a story about legal strategy.
Right.
About society changing and about never giving up.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds us that fighting for equality is rarely easy, and that sometimes setbacks can actually lead to bigger wins.
It also shows how important courts are
in
shaping how we understand the Constitution.
Absolutely.
And defining our rights.
Minor might seem like something from the past, but it's still relevant today in debates about the role of judges, the meaning of equality, and the fight for voting rights in America.
And it leaves us with one last question to think about.
Hmm.
What if the court had ruled differently in Minor v. Happersett?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
How would history have changed?
Yeah.
Would women have gotten the right to vote sooner?
Right.
Would the fight for equal rights have been different?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's something we can only imagine. But it shows how much power legal decisions have on the direction of a nation.
It's a powerful reminder that the fight for our rights never really ends.
Right.
We're all still part of that story.
Yeah.
Every day.
Through our actions.
Right.
Our choices.
Our commitment to a fairer world.
Well said. I think that's a perfect place to wrap things up.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Minor v. Happersett.
It was my pleasure.
Until next time, keep exploring.
Keep learning.
Keep questioning.
And keep fighting for a better future.